You can now take KRBN Internet News Talk Radio with you on your mobile phone, as we are making it easier to listen to the great hosts here on KRBN, including our very own West Lane County Commissioner, Jay Bozovich. It's free and available on Google Play. Just look for player.fm. That's player.fm and search for KRBN.
Live from Lane County, Oregon, it's the Boz Knows Show with your host, West Lane County Commissioner Jay Bozovich. And now, here's Jay.
Good afternoon, and it's a gorgeous day in the Pacific Northwest. And welcome to the Boz Knows Show, and I'm your host, Jay Bozovich, West Lane County Commissioner, and we're coming to you live from beautiful downtown Elmira, and I am back, and I'm still your commissioner. I'm back from jolly old England, where I got to spend a good part of my time in Cornwall, the land of Doc Martin and Ross Poldark. Yeah, really a pretty picturesque area. Actually went to the town that passes for Port Wynn in Doc Martin at Port Isaac. And it is exactly like just about the TV show. A few places they obviously take from other spots in England. But you could actually see the house that is Doc Martin's house, and everything is in that town. Just, you know, picturesque little towns, these little towns right on the coast in Cornwall. It was just really pretty. And got to see Stonehenge on the way. So it kind of gives you a feeling for, how long we've been around as humanity. And England kind of gives you a feel for what's really old. You know, as I sat in a tavern that dated back to 1300s, you realize, as you're thinking about it, that was before Columbus discovered America. So it, you know, history there is a little bit deeper, and I really enjoyed being there, enjoyed kind of getting to see some of that history in England and visiting around there. It was a lot of fun. Was helping my wife, who was actually leading a textile tour there. So I did spend some time slinging luggage and helping herd the cats that are the folks that signed up for the tour. So it wasn't all fun and games in some ways. I was actually there to do some work. But I'm back, and now it's time for the KRBN election recap. Not to be outdone by CNN and Fox when it comes to the lead-in music for election coverage. Robin, my producer extraordinaire there, helped us out there. Oh, and by the way, if you want to get in on the conversation and talk about yesterday's election results, ask me about my trip to England, or talk about whatever else you want to talk about. It's 646-721-9887 is the telephone number here at the Boz Knows Show, and just press 1. And that lets Robin, my producer and call screener, know you want to get in on the conversation. Again, that's 646-721-9887. Just press 1. So yesterday's election was interesting, and it did some interesting things. And I guess, you know, nationally, one of the takeaways for me was there were surprises where Republicans did better in some states, and there were surprises where the Democrats had stronger showings than we thought, but they sort of balanced out. And if you step back and look historically, prospectively, it was actually a really good election, midterm election for a sitting president. Usually the sitting president will lose seats in both houses in a midterm election, and to actually gain seats in the Senate and then only lose the number of seats that were lost yesterday in the House, was far better than recent history. As you look at the first midterm for Barack Obama, or the first midterm for the Bushes or the Clintons, that just, that was not a bad midterm for a president. So in some ways, you can look at it that way. Kind of interesting that Florida and Iowa and Missouri, a couple districts, and Virginia kind of seemed to, and the Tennessee race went the Republicans' way. But then I look at Oregon and California, Washington, and some other areas, and there is definitely a very strong blue wave here on the West Coast. Maybe there's just different motivations. I'm not sure. It looked like there was a real success in getting population centers to turn out. And population centers generally hold a very strong Democratic edge in registration. And that kind of showed in the results for Oregon. So as you look at Oregon, and there's a very strong turnout in the Portland area, a very strong turnout in the Eugene area. And then as you look at how the governor's race went, and Kate Brown is back for another 4 years with a 5% win, which is not a landslide and it's not a mandate, but it's not a close race. It was a lot more spread than what was predicted when the polls were showing it less than 3% on some polling. So, a comfortable win for Kate Brown, but not a not a mandate or a landslide. Unfortunately, it looks like the legislature is going to be a supermajority in both houses for the Democrats, and I believe that they're going to govern like it was a landslide in the coming year. So, as you look at what the statewide election results meant, it means that we are going to have a legislature that's going to be very activist, and a governor willing to sign whatever they put in front of her, which means we're looking at a cap and trade, cap and invest, whatever you want to call it, carbon tax bill will definitively come out this year and be signed by the governor. Which I'm a little concerned because, the estimates of how much that might cost the average Oregon household are fairly significant. Because when you talk about, raising the cost of carbon, carbon is energy. Energy is built into every product we have, and it's also, more directly people associate it with their electric bills or their bills at the gas pump, but it's really built into a lot of other things. Everything from the restaurant you buy your food at, where they've got to buy natural gas in order to cook that food, that natural gas price is going to go up, so that may be reflected in how much your restaurant charges you for that food. So you'll be paying that carbon pricing of whatever they do every time you purchase almost anything in the state. It's going to be it's the kind of tax I don't like. It's going to be a tax you won't see. It won't say on the gas pump or on your electric bill, this portion of your electric bill is due to the cap and trade system that Oregon put in place, but there will be a portion of your electric bill that's paying just for that system. There's going to be a portion of your filling up your tank. There's going to be a portion of your grocery bill. There's going to be a portion of your clothing cost. All of it's going to have that buried in it somewhere. And hidden taxes that people don't really understand they're paying are really easy for politicians to increase. So as the system goes down the road, they can make it work out to actually generate more and more revenue without people really seeing that pain. So look for that coming out of the legislature with a supermajority and the governor willing to sign it. You're probably going to see some changes to criminal sentencing laws come through. You might see some work on trying to revamp the property tax limitation laws. Of course, that'll have to be referred out as a constitutional amendment. You may see some attempts to backdoor that in some ways. So it will be interesting, especially as some of the statewide measures fail, particularly Measure 104, which would have provided better definition around what is a revenue increase and require any supermajority to pass. But if you have a supermajority, that doesn't even matter. So you may see some tax increases in the next biennium here as the party that tends to want to increase revenues is going to have the votes to do so without any cooperation from the other party. It'll be interesting to see, though, because their supermajority in the Senate is slim, and Senator Betsy Johnson is quite the maverick sometimes. So it'll be interesting to see on some things whether they can get her to go along. So that may be our saving grace, is that Betsy sometimes can be pretty pro-business and may not go along with some of the things that the Democrats want to do. She is very strong on education, though, so she's probably going to be right with them on increasing education budget, which somehow or another is going to have to be paid for. So they're probably going to get her to agree to revenue increases because it's going to be matched with increases in the education budget. So with that cheerful piece of news for some people, there are other people that might really be cheering it on. I know it was a big win in Oregon for the public employee unions in a lot of ways, because they kind of won what they wanted to win. They defeated Measure 103 and 104, which were tax limiting and revenue limiting measures pretty handily. And that's, was a lot of union effort in that. The one thing that did, the only measure that did pass actually provides more money for government projects, government housing projects, which are managed by public employees, but allowing the ownership of those to be shared with non-government. So it's an interesting concept with that bonding issue under Measure 102. Some of the bigger headline news statewide was the defeat of Measure 105 and 106. 105, of course, was to repeal what people call our sanctuary state law. I've talked about it on the Bo's Nose program before, that law actually doesn't qualify us as a sanctuary state. under the executive order that defines what sanctuary is from the Trump administration, it does not bar the communication with ICE after you have somebody in criminal custody, and that's what they define as sanctuary in the executive order. So it was kind of an interesting play to repeal that section of statute. And in some ways, I voted against the Measure 105 because I kind of like that section of statute, because it's one of the few places in state law they have codified the concept that if you don't provide the money for something, then local government doesn't have to do it, and doesn't have to spend their own money to do something that you, a higher level government, want done. Because that's basically all that section of state law says, is local government can't spend local resources enforcing a federal law. The federal government's got to provide that. So it'll be, that's one of those things where you just, I kind of like that being in there, because then that helps me when I fight back against the state and they want me to spend local money to enforce a state law, say on some kind of gun control or whatever law they come up with, and they haven't given us the money to do so. I can point to that and say, if it's good for immigration enforcement, it ought to be good for any other form of enforcement. Give us the money, then we'll do the work. Yeah. So that was kind of one of my reasons for voting no. 106, was interesting, and this kind of gets along with the fact that they got enough Democrats to turn out, and the Democrats tend to defeat this sort of thing. But I'm a little surprised because the concept of tax dollars paying for abortion is not is necessarily popular, even with people that support choice, because it's about, do we want to use tax dollars to pay for something like that? So that was interesting. But looking at all that together, what passed and didn't pass, who got elected to statewide office, the majorities and all that, it all points to the fact that there was a real concerted effort to get those high-density Democrat, high-density population areas to turn out and turn in their ballots. And, that just it won the day. But one of the things that is still very obvious when you look at the results by county is just how far apart the rural Oregon is with urban Oregon. There's still a huge rural-urban divide on a lot of issues. If you just look at the governor's race, rural Oregon supported Newt Bueller very heavily, and Multnomah County and the Portland area supported Kate Brown. So it's definitive. This shows this election kind of even greater showed that divide between rural Oregon and urban Oregon in some ways, and just who voted for what. The math just works out that there's a lot more people in urban Oregon than there are in rural Oregon, and they can outvote rural Oregon, and that's where we get Kate Brown in the supermajority and the results we got out of the statewide measures. So turning a bit more locally, and as I do, I'll just remind folks that if you have any comments on the statewide elections, you can reach me at 646-721-9887. Just press 1, and that lets Robin, my call screener and producer extraordinaire, know you want to get in on the conversation. Again, that's 646-721-9887. And just press 1 if you want to get in on the conversation here on the Bose Knows Show and talk to me, your host, Jay Bozovich, West Lane County Commissioner. So as we turn to local election results here in Lane County, once again, we have the proverbial tilting at windmills by Art Robinson and trying to bring down Peter DeFazio. And the local version of that just here in Lane County was that in Lane County, DeFazio doubled Art Robinson's vote tally, 2-1. So you're just, Art, you're a nice guy. You're a very smart man. I like some of your ideas about governance and small government and individual rights. But maybe it's time for you to let somebody else take a try at that windmill, because you've tried multiple times and it seems to be getting worse each time. Locally here in Lane County, again, we're one of those areas where Eugene had a really high turnout. Kate Brown, basically 95,000 to Newt Bueller's 67,000. So that's basically 28,000 more votes out of Lane County for Kate Brown. And that's really an interesting, quite at large, much more winning percentage here in Lane County than her 5% margin. So definitely not going to see many Republicans elected out of Lane County. As we looked down the ballot, there were a couple races that were competitive, or at least thought to be competitive. Terry Greer and Kathy McEwen, at least in Lane County and in the whole 9th district, Kathy managed to pull that one out. She also won here in Lane County. Marty Wilde easily defeated Mark Herbert in that what was supposed to be a competitive district in House 11. Wasn't really. And, basically it was an all Democrats and everything else. That brings us on down to our county races. And yours truly won my reelection, actually won it in May when I took more than 50% of the vote, but it's kind of being a nonpartisan race, then my name is the only name that appears on the ballot. 1,170 people did write somebody else in, but I took 18,826 votes myself, so I easily beat the write-ins. Of course, the write-ins can be anything from Mickey Mouse to Donald Duck. Fortunately, when it's that far apart, they don't count them. They just lump them into one. But that was nice, and it was also nice that my 18,826 votes was the most votes of any of the three commissioners' races. When you look over into Springfield, where Joe Birney was also on the ballot by himself, he took 15,400 votes. And our districts are balanced with the number of people and about the same number of registered voters. So happy to see I took a few more there. East Lane Commissioner. This was the race that basically was the swing race for whether or not the Lane County Board of Commissioners was going to continue with I wouldn't call it a conservative majority. I'd say a more conservative majority versus a more progressive majority. Because it's hard to look at Pat Farr and his record as a legislator when he supported tax increases, his current efforts to support homelessness and other issues, and look at him and say, that's a pure conservative. It's hard to look at me in a lot of ways and say I'm a pure conservative because of my very libertarian social issues. And, if you actually get past some of the rhetoric from the other side and look at what I actually have done, governed very much from the middle. And Gary Williams is a pragmatic former mayor of Cottage Grove and is not what I would consider to be far right. But Gary, Pat, and I made up a voting majority with Sid Lykin already losing his race. Actually, the majority in this last year has been the four of us. Sid already lost his race to Joe Birney in the spring. So we were down to three, and Gary Williams' reelection was going to depend on whether or not we held on to that, I would say, moderate to conservative majority. Heather Buck beat Gary, and I would consider her a moderate to progressive. The interesting thing is, one of the places I think Gary and myself are probably a little bit more conservative on is when it comes to labor relations issues and budget. Being much more of a fiscal conservatives, that's probably the one place you could have called the majority a little bit conservatives, as we were trying to control costs so we could provide more service. Well, Ms. Buck had the backing of AFSCME and many other collective bargaining units in the area, and actually was out at the picket lines when they were striking us, attempting to get up to a 20% increase in their wages at a time that would have caused us to have to lay some of their members off in order to pay for the contract they originally asked for. Joe Birney was heavily supported by AFSCME, and Commissioner Sorensen has been supported by public employee unions in the past. So what you really kind of have is a switchover from a more fiscally conservative oriented board to now a board that has more of a public employee union bent. So it'll be interesting to see how union negotiations move forward with the new board next year and what it does to the budget of Lane County. And whether or not, you know, you're going to start seeing cuts in services based on to pay for increases in contracts. Or is there going to be some kind of attempt to go after new revenues to pay for the increases in contracts? So it'll be interesting with Heather coming in. I think Heather is probably the most moderate of the three that are going to form that. That majority, and therefore she'll be a swing vote and possibly become a local version of Senator Betsy Johnson, which, you know, would, you know, if you're going to model yourself after a legislature, she's a well-respected legislator. And so I'm kind of, you know, Heather, you know, at least ran on the moderate side. Talked about jobs and housing and business, economic development. It'll just be interesting to see how that balances with the fact that she's also been a very strong union supporter, and whether that can be balanced out in how we execute our budget in Lane County, and whether or not they're going to, you know, increase property taxes, which has an impact on people's ability to get housing and all. In order to pay for what they may want to do with unions. So it'll be interesting to watch in the future. I'm looking forward to working with both Heather and Joe. We have to work as a team. You have to count three as a county commissioner in Lane County because there are five of us and it takes three votes to get anything done. And hopefully there'll be, you know, and this is, you know, goes back to one of my major principles in politics is hopefully they also have the assumption and are trying to do what's best for the community. And it's just a matter of me convincing them to, you know, to moderate and, you know, whether my ideas are what's best for the community or their ideas are, and they may have some great ideas and we'll be able to work on those. So, but it is a change for Lane County. And it's going to be some interesting times in the future to see how it works out, to see, you know, who becomes the leader of that new majority. Does it become Heather because she'll be the swing vote, or does it become Pete Sorensen because he's the senior commissioner out of those three? It'll be interesting to see. And, I'm hoping that we can kind of work together in a way that ignores some of the party labels and just looks at what's best for Lane County and the citizens of Lane County. Because I think we've tried very hard over the last 8 years that I've been a commissioner to keep that front and center in our mind as to what's best for Lane County. So kind of moving down ballot a little bit, I just have to mention a couple things. One, I was shocked by the margin with which 4J was able to get their bond measure passed, the largest bond measure ever in Lane County, you know, $300 million plus, and it passed basically with a 2-to-1 margin. Yeah, that's just amazing to me. And I'm just, you know, surprised at the margin and kind of just wonder, you know, in my back of my head, you know, how that became so successful. You know, Yeah, just really pretty impressive win for 4J School Board. You know, after I wasn't, you know, I thought for sure they were going to have trouble because it was such a big ask of the voters. On the other side, Siusaw School District in the Florence area failed in their bond measure, which was a little over $100 million, you know, a third the size. But, of course, there's a lot less taxable value there, so it was actually a larger per thousand ask of voters. So, you know, they lost not 2-1. It wasn't a flip over, but they lost significantly. They lost by more than 10 points, which is a sound defeat. And they're going to have to go back to the drawing board and kind of figure out, can they maybe split up the improvements to the high school, do parts of it? You know, does it all have to be done at once? You know, what can you do that the voters will buy? And that'll be interesting. But speaking of measures and all that stuff, I was pleased to see a no vote prevail on Measure 20-290, which is the star voting. It was something that I felt was a solution looking for a problem to solve. And our Lane County elections, which that was the only thing it would have impacted because it was a charter amendment to Lane County, so it only affects Lane County elections. All of our elections are nonpartisan. So we don't quite run into the issue of spoiler candidates, which is kind of what star voting was trying to fix, was the idea when somebody would lose like a Republican or a Democrat primary and be so angry about it, they turned around and got a minor party or some invented some new minor party to get on the general election ballot and swung the race actually to somebody that probably would not have won yet for the spoiler candidacy. And that was the intent really of what star voting was supposed to do, was supposed to basically take away the ability of folks to run spoiler candidates. And with the way Lane County works as nonpartisan, the top two vote getters move forward. So you really don't get the spoiler candidate. You can't come back in a general election and be a spoiler candidate or bring in a spoiler candidate in the November election in a Lane County election because the maximum people on the ballot is two. And it's because they were the top two vote getters from May. So there's a runoff and a primary that's open to all. Top two vote getters move on. So there isn't that issue of needing to have a system to eliminate that. Now, the secondary claim to star voting was, well, you only have to have one election. Well, Lane County still has to run both elections. You know, we still got to run all the elections for all the state races in May, all the local measures that might be on a ballot in May, and we're still going to have to run a general election. So it's not going to save Lane County any money. In fact, it is actually going to cost us money to set up the system. So to me, you know, if star voting is going to come about, it needs to come about in partisan races, and it needs to be a statewide measure, and not, you know, or be in a county where they have partisan elections. You know, Lane County was not the place to test it out. It was a complicated system of voting. It was really not necessary in Lane County, and it was going to be expensive for us. So kind of happy to see star voting not be implemented here in Lane County. We'll save our tax resources for something else. So I also just have to say congratulations to some of the folks that did win their elections. You know, we saw, you know, a lot of mayors get reelected that were unopposed. Mayor Florence got reelected, but I also saw it was kind of a controversial election for city council, and it looks like Woody Woodbury, you know, was the top vote getter there, and Geraldine Lucio was the second vote getter. So congratulations to Woody and Geraldine for making it on the city council there in Florence. Basically all of the Eugene city council races were decided in May. Interesting looking at so it was similar nonpartisan races. They all got more than 50%, one person on the ballot for November, but Mike Clark got 1,000 more votes than the second highest candidate for city council out of the four city councilors. So congratulations, Mike Clark, for your strong show of support from your ward. And I just want to say congratulations to Bob Forsythe, reelected to the Dune City Mayor, because he was actually kind of appointed in interim there. We saw, Jeff Gowing reelected to Cottage Grove. So, yeah, there's just a lot of local elections. And I just have to say, even the people that lost local elections here, I'm so happy to see enough people run to have competitive elections in a lot of these local races. I mean, there's some places like Coburg City Councilor, there's supposed to be three places and they only had two people on the ballot. So it was a vote for three. So there's the third person is probably going to be a write-in winner. So it's kind of sad to see that sometimes. So when you see folks that actually ran and didn't win, they stepped up, they tried, they got involved and wanted to make a difference and put themselves out there. And I know from experience, it's not an easy thing to do to be in the public eye. And even for some of these little city council races, like the city of Florence got really nasty this year. So you really have to, kind of go in with your lead underwear and a thick skin and be ready to take the slings and arrows. It takes, I really have to appreciate folks that are willing to step up and run for these elections. So congratulations and thank you to everyone that ran. And I just want to say thank you to everyone that supported me in my election. I look forward to my next term here at Lane County. I'll continue my work to try and make Lane County a better place to live, and really appreciate your support. So with that, I am going to shut up. And if you want to call in at 646-721-9887 and give me your thoughts on the election, just press 1. Let's Robin know if you want to get in here. Again, that's 646-721-9887. Just press 1. And I have to ask Robin, any thoughts on yesterday's election? What do you walk away with? Am I way off the mark with the idea that, Oregon kind of saw the blue wave in the municipal and high, population areas turning out really well?
It's interesting looking at the breakdown and how the different voted. It's kind of like they all got the same library card or something.
Yeah, you're mipping in and out a little bit there for me. It is interesting looking at the vote and just, how things went.
Well, I will say I was not surprised though in the turnout in the outcome.
No, and I don't think I was terribly surprised. I guess my only surprise was that some of the races that I thought were going to be close weren't closer.
Right.
I watched Terry Greer in House District 9 work so hard, and sometimes when you get somebody that works that hard, that can overcome a registration difference. She was knocking on doors right down to the almost 8 o'clock on election day. I would love to know how many doors she actually knocked on in her district. She worked hard. So I was expecting that to be closer. I was expecting the governor's race to be closer. I wasn't surprised by House 11. too much. But it just, you know, and I wasn't surprised that the governor won re-election. I was just surprised it was by as much, by 5%. I thought it was going to be tighter.
Yeah. And I wonder how many people voted for Heather Bach just to shut her up. Because every time you turned on YouTube or the radio, all you heard was Heather Bach, Heather Bach, Heather Bach.
Well, she did a good job of fundraising.
Yeah, she did.
And had a lot of support, you know, from the unions and a lot of echo chamber there going. You know, when you get, you know, that union support, that's a lot of foot soldiers that come along with that. And that also means that's a lot of social media accounts that can like and share the same thing. So it pops up on your feed a lot.
Well, I'll tell you a little funny story in a way. This is called bad timing, is that we got CenturyTel going around the neighborhood here because apparently they're putting in fiber optics. So the three of them are going door to door trying to get subscribers. And most people are ignoring them because they think it's somebody, you know, trying to sell a vote or a measure or something like that.
Yeah, it's like somebody electioneering and it's somebody actually selling.
Exactly. Poor guys.
Yeah. Yeah. Which kind of brings me to another thing. You know, it came up, at least in social media, is, you know, there is a court decision that defines, you know, that door knocking they do in elections as free speech, not solicitation. And so that you can ignore a no solicitation sign because you're not, quote, soliciting. The problem I always found, and I don't knock on doors that have a no soliciting sign when I'm going around doing door to door. I wish people would post them more prominently because you quite often get up to a door and it's on the side and you can't see it till you actually get right on the person's doorstep. And by that time, their dog's barking like crazy and you've woken the baby up and they're not happy with you. Even though you saw it and were walking away, you've already disturbed the household. So if the whole reason you got it is you don't want to be disturbed, put it where you can see it from the curb.
Exactly.
In fact, put it out on your signpost at the curb or something. But it was interesting that everyone I've heard complain about door knockers that ignored no soliciting signs, it was door knockers for progressive leftist center candidates and campaigns and measure campaigns. Because it seems like they're okay, and they kind of carry that court ruling around with them to say, look, see, we're allowed to.
Yeah, and here's my free speech. I'm going to yell at you.
Yeah. So I just, you know, it was one of those interesting things that came up this election, and I've always looked at those signs and said, nope, not going to knock. I might leave something under their doormat where it can't be seen from the street, you know, some literature or something like that, but I will not knock on their door.
Speaking of, here's one of my pet peeves.
Yeah. And
I've actually used to follow up on this. Okay. Picture this, if you will. Okay. You go on vacation to, I don't know, England. And you have your newspaper, you know, somebody's picking up your newspaper, and you have somebody pick up your mail, and you have a, you know, you leave the TV on, you got the lights so they come on randomly. You do everything to make it look like that you're home. And then somebody comes up and they leave a flyer on your front door, and you get burglarized.
Yeah.
Because that flyer is advertising you're not home. Who's going to get sued?
Yeah.
You'd be amazed on how many people that have done that, and I call them on that, and they're just like, oh.
Yeah. Yeah, see, I won't stick them in the door jam or hang on a doorknob. The first campaign I was involved with, I got door hangers sort of, you know, flyers that hung on doorknobs.
Right.
And I heard from lots of people about that. It was like, last time I did that, you know, they were like, yeah, that's like a flag you're putting on my house.
Yeah,
but exactly. Take that down, in a couple of days, people know I'm not home. Although, other thing I've learned is when you leave literature on somebody's front doorstep, people don't use their front doors anymore. They come in and out through the garage. You know, they hit the door opener, they pull in their garage, close the door, and they never even see their front doors. You'd be amazed. I've come up the front doors and seen stuff underneath the doormats that looked like it had been there for a year.
Oh.
The front door is all dusty and dirty. It's like that people just don't use front doors anymore.
Is that what that's for?
Yeah. I mean, it's just unless you have kids that run in and out of the house all the time, a lot of adults don't use front doors. They come in and out through the garage from their vehicle. or they use the back door to get out in the yard for barbecue or to go, work in the yard or whatever. You don't walk in and out of the front door to go gardening because you don't want to track anything. You come out in the garage to get your tools first,
Well, you can't do the barbecue anymore because we'll probably have a carbon tax.
Yeah, the briquettes will get too expensive.
Yeah. Or some are a good band for whatever reason. Who knows?
Yeah. It's a little bit depressing to me because I am a fiscal conservative, and I kind of feel like the people that are now in control of state and local governments are generally not, and it's not so much that I don't want government. I'm not anti-government. I just want government to be efficient and at least be accountable and I'm just really concerned that things are just going to run away, and because they're running away, they're going to start having to cut stuff because they're not being efficient with their money, and then that leads to calls for new taxes. And with between the regulations that are being talked about on carbon and any new taxes, we're going to the state's economy is going to suffer eventually.
Yeah, then we'll be forced on like a transportation tax and. Sooner or later, carbon tax that affects the vehicles, kind of like Portland, Medford. What else can we throw in there?
Oh, I don't know. They tried that value added tax.
Oh God.
And remember Measure 97?
Yeah.
Yep. That gross receipts tax or whatever you want to call it was based. And I was in England, and the VAT there is incredible. And some of the places you went actually had it on the tab, how much the value added tax is. It's huge.
Well, and speaking of, if I can find it real quick here, as I'm looking at different measures, there was something in Portland about an extra surtax. Let me find it here real quick. Got a lot of stuff to go through.
Yeah. Yeah, I think I know which one you're talking about.
I mean, I have a cow every time I take a few minutes and look at my utility bill of all the taxes. And then cable, oh my God.
Yeah, all these little taxes that are buried in those things.
Measure 26201, City of Portland imposes surcharge on certain retailers, funds clean energy, and job training.
Yeah, and it passed by a 2-to-1 margin.
Yeah. Now, is there any accountability tracking of where those funds go?
I don't know.
Of course, wasn't it? It was Portland that also had the, $5 a head arts tax?
I'm not sure.
Yeah, I think they did. And then Multnomah County had the iTax a while back. And I think they had to give that up because nobody wanted to pay it after they voted it in.
Yeah. And I was just looking. They also passed bonding for affordable housing.
And don't get me started on the personal property tax for business, or the TP tax, as I call it. Your $35 arts tax was due April 17th, 2018. with eight. Oh, just changed the page on me. Stop it. With a $15 late penalty has been assessed. So, see if I can find what it says. So, yeah, there is an arts tax in Portland.
Yeah, it's Portland.
Yeah.
At least we haven't gotten that down here in Lane County yet.
Yeah, I really don't understand how they can do that. Because I think it is per head. If you have to be over 18 or something like that, then congratulations. You owe us $5.
Yeah. So to completely change the subject for a minute.
Oh, let's do.
So yesterday's Board of Commissioners meeting, we had an hour or so of public comment from a bunch of homeless people that we, you know, we had that quote spontaneous protest camp spring up on county property there across from the public service building, protesting the city of Eugene's homeless camping ordinances and a prohibition on camping. And of course they camping on county property to protest the city, which don't get me started there. That's the way the last protest started. But with the Ninth Circuit decision, you can't just pass and then arrest anyone that doesn't want to move when, if you don't have an alternative for them. So Lane County, our staff and our administrator in particular, realized we had a piece of ground that we had foreclosed on up on Highway 99 that would be much more suitable because it was right across the street from St. Vincent de Paul's Lindholm Center, where they have showers and they serve meals during the day and have some other services there. Like mail service, mailbox service, and a few other things. So we convinced the campers to relocate up there voluntarily, provided them with a much better situation because they didn't have bathrooms or anything over at Butterfly Lot. We actually provided them porta pots. We provided them hand washing stations. We had running water for them. We provided a fence for security around the campsite, and we provided trash service and pickup. So it was a much more sanitary situation and a better place to camp and all that. Well, Lane County, we don't run rest stops and homeless camps. That's not, you know, we don't have any that we run now. So once we got them, you know, they were over there, we knew they were going to be there for a while. So we talked to St. Vincent de Paul that has run camps and asked them to contract with us to run the camp. Well, the campers are upset about that. They wanted to run their own camp. You know, they wanted to be self-governed, so to speak, or something. And I don't know, you know, how they were going to manage that. And, you know, how, you know, if there is a camper misbehaving, how would they even have authority to deal with that? Because they don't own the property and no one had delegated any authority to manage the property to somebody camping there. You know, even if it's the quote organizer and leader of the protest. So they were upset that we were bringing St. Vincent de Paul in because apparently some of the campers don't like them. And the guy that is, quote, their leader and organizer, of course, was upset that he wasn't going to get to run the show and actually had written scripts for most of the public comment for the campers that came in. And it was quite the show. And to me, it was one of those things of looking a gift horse in the mouth. You know, here Lane County finds some land, provides porta potties, hand washing stations, fencing, trash service, helps them move their belongings, helps them set it up. In fact, this happened while I was in England, but I heard about it from somebody with Eugene Police Department. our county administrator was out there for over 12 hours on a Saturday. He personally was moving porta potties around, you know, pushing them around on the skids to get them set up and helping people set up tents and move belongings himself on a Saturday. And these people were upset that we're going to have St. Vincent's manage the site. And we're going to be able to delegate some of our authority as the property owners of that site to St. Vincent in that management contract. You know, because at least St. Vincent is, you know, an organization, you know, licensed by the state. They're a nonprofit that's, you know, got all of their, you know, papers in order. They have liability insurance and a few other things. You know, it's none of the things that any of the campers really have, you know, that there's some ability for the county to hold, you know, St. Vincent accountable if things go wrong. So I was kind of shocked and stunned to sit there and listen to folks talk so poorly about one of the best nonprofits in this state. All I could think is as they were talking about how the folks at St. Vincent are just pocketing the money and they're a bunch of thieves and all that stuff is, have they met Terry McDonald? Do they know Paul Neville? You know, have they really sat down with Chief Kearns, you know, former Chief Kearns that works for them now? These people are dedicated to providing the services they provide. And I can't think of anyone more innovative than Terry McDonald in trying to weave together revenue streams and programs so that they all complement each other. You know, from the secondhand stores that St. Vinny's runs, hire, you know, some of the people who actually work for St. Vinny's are people they're trying to help get, you know, back into the workforce and have had issues and all that. You know, they have their recycled glass facility that's actually taking a waste product and turning it into an ornamental product that they can actually take the revenue from the sales of that and reinvest it in other programs. It's just, you know, he's done a spectacular job of weaving all that together to provide all these various services, including a lot of services to homeless or people close to being homeless. And it was just surprising to hear such a good organization be denigrated in public. And just surprisingly how ungrateful it seemed some of these folks were for what the county had done to try and provide them a safe place to sleep where they would not get woken up in the middle of the night, where their tent wouldn't disappear during the day if they had to try and go and, you know, file some paperwork somewhere to try and, you know, connect with some other benefits and try and move on from being homeless or to look for permanent housing during the day. They knew that there was this secure place they could leave their belongings. It was really surprising. And it was interesting to see some of the comments on the KEZI story, kind of the community kind of saw that too. So I think, you know, when you're in the room at the time, you're kind of starting to think, geez, is St. Vinny's really this bad? Yeah. Do I need to investigate St. Vinny's? And then, kind of go back and look at the comments on the story on KEZI. And they kind of followed my first thoughts geez, have they really met the people that run St. Vinny's? Have they met anyone on the board of St. Vinny's? You know, what a bunch of compassionate people. Well, that's the election wrap-up show of the Bo's Nose Show. I hear the music coming on. And enough about homelessness and campers and stuff. I'm sure we'll have lots of time to talk about that again on the next Bo's Nose Show. Next week, it's going to be the Association of Oregon County's annual meeting, and hopefully I'll be able to break away long enough to do the Bo's Nose Show, but I'll have some more interesting feedback statewide on what county commissioners our thinking of the future. So be back here next week, live from beautiful downtown Elmira. Thank you for listening to the Bose Nose Show. Talk to you next week.